streets and police stations, the attacks, the broad-based attacks across the island, Spanish Town, that seems to be tuning down, calming down. What needs to happen is that we need to get smart in this war that, quote-unquote, that we are fighting. We need to stop, ensure that the abuses of citizens' rights, which have characterized the operations of our security forces over many, many years, are not occurring, and that if any, that we have independent oversight of the operations as they are occurring right now. And we need clear assessment of what happened in the last few days.
Now, there's been a history in Jamaica by the security forces of killings of civilians that have not been properly accounted for?
Absolutely. We've reported on it to the Inter-American Commission. There are numerous reports. Over decades, our police fatal shootings is one of the highest in the world. Last year, our police killed 246 civilians, and there's not, in the last 10 years, there's been one prosecution of a policeman for illegal use of force. It's a real problem. We have a complete and total impunity for abuse of rights in Jamaica.
Professor Bowling, you're saying this is a failure of the war on drugs. Can you explain what you see is going on right now in Jamaica? You have the former Minister of National Security, Dr. Peter Phillips, saying Tivoli Gardens, that Christopher Dudas Koch is possibly more powerful than the Jamaican Labour Party itself.
Well, I think that in the broadest context, the prohibition of drugs has led to the creation of a clandestine market, which is kind of a straightforward and obvious point, really, that if the war on drugs, in its pursuit of what is seen by many people as a kind of evil, fails to actually prevent the growers and the transshippers and the consumers in the U.S. and in Western Europe from using cocaine, then the only way that people can get hold of it is on the clandestine market. So prohibition creates the clandestine market, which then requires arming in order for the traffic to proceed. The U.S. is the flow of firearms southwards from the U.S. Via the Gulf States and Puerto Rico is extreme. And Jamaican people have complained for many, many years that the northwards the pressure to prevent the northwards flow of drugs has not been matched to any extent by the U.S. attempt to prevent southward flow of guns. That then links with a long-established, ongoing kind of political corruption and links between the so-called garrison communities, organized crime groups, the dons, right up through the political structure. So cocaine has essentially created a massive funding base for people who understand themselves and see themselves and present themselves as business people. And that organized crime now reaches right through to the very heart of government. And when it's threatened, when this sort of para state of the dons and the posses is threatened, they clearly respond with armed violence.
Now, what do you make of the fact that the Jamaican government, after resisting the extradition, then does this massive attack and somehow still has not captured the object of their search, Christopher Koch?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary. It's tragic. And, my heart goes out to the families of the people who've lost loved ones and the people who've been injured in this, in my view, entirely wasteful folly and clearly not just unproductive, but counterproductive in terms of loss of life. And, I think the first thing is that, as Carolyn says, the way in which the police have conducted themselves over recent years, over many years, in terms of extrajudicial executions, in terms of political corruption within the police and across government, it's hardly surprising that the government should have attempted to conceal their wrongdoing and to lobby to protect people who many within the community, many within the political class, see as their own. Why exactly at this point the government has chosen to turn a kind of sort of resistance of handing over coke into an offensive, it will need to be explored by an investigation, which I think absolutely needs to happen. It isn't just how the police have conducted themselves on the street that needs to be investigated. What is now needed is a thoroughgoing investigation, a public investigation of corruption within the police service, within government, the links with organized crime, on the extrajudicial executions, and how all this links together. Because in order to respond to it, in order for Jamaica to move forward, there needs to be something, in my view, close to a truth and reconciliation process and disarmament of the people on the streets who understand themselves within the organized crime groups, within the street corner crews, as soldiers. And that is, you know, we need to talk disarmament, we need to talk demobilization of people who see themselves as soldiers, and a more thoroughgoing and positive response, not warfare. That approach is not working.
Benjamin Moling, we're going to have to leave it there. Carolyn Gomes as well, thank you very much, from Jamaicans for Justice. And finally, that comment at the beginning of this segment, the blue-chip law firm Manat Phelps and Phillips signing a $400,000 contract to lobby on behalf of the government of Jamaica. Charles Manat is the former chair of the Democratic National Committee, who also represents the Dominican Republic, where he was an ambassador 10 years ago, hired to fight the extradition of Christopher Koch. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shrufa Dukaduce, Aaron Mate, Anjali Kamat, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Mike DeFilippo, Peter Curries, Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Nick Gilla, Hugh Grant, Samantha Chambly, Jessel Noor, Vesta Godars. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And thank you, Amy, for that.
Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
I'm so sorry for stepping on you. Thank you, Amy, for that retro edition of Democracy Now! Yes, from last Friday. We had some trouble with the computer. And we have more trouble because we don't have a concert billboard. So all I can say is you're listening. Oh, you know what? Let's let Jimmy Cliff say it.
Hi, this is Jimmy Cliff. In case you don't know who that is, it is I who said, you can get it if you really want. And you can hear my latest album on WUSB Stony Brook.
That's true. And if you put out another album, we will play it. It's 6 p.m. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Time, once again, for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. This week, Off the Wall goes to Slovenia as part of the retrospective of the recent trip overseas to the former Yugoslav Republic. We're going to be playing a bit of an excerpt from an interesting car ride we had while we were over there in Slovenia, and also listening to some of Slovenian radio. In fact, we're going to be hearing from excerpts primarily from a station known as Radio Student. It's a student-run radio station that is broadcast throughout the country. We'll be back with a live show next week, and we welcome your cards and letters and comments at otw@2600.com. But for now, we're going to go over to Slovenia, where Off the Wall visited about a month or so ago, and you'll hear something from the radio there, and you'll hear some excerpts from the automobile over in Slovenia. Enjoy.
Ekspresni vlak za Paris. Pula, Trst, Milano, Torino, Grenoble, Paris polazi sa 14. koloseka, drugi peron lijevo. Ponavljam. Ekspresni vlak za Paris.
Ustopite na pravi postaji. Radio Student, peron 89, tier 3.
Vlak, ki nikoli ne izstiri.
Well, we're here with Gorist. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. It's just we're not used to names that require pronunciation back home. And we're driving at breakneck speed. We're actually going 125, 130 kilometers an hour. In the on the highway in Slovenia, leaving Ljubljana, and I'm sure I pronounced that wrong as well. What's the right way to pronounce the city?
No, the right pronunciation would be Ljubljana.
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 No, you're saying the last J is.
This is like that movie where they try to teach somebody to speak good English, and it's just not working. Well, Zagreb, I can say that right. 121 kilometers. Only 121 kilometers. Okay, yeah. But we still have to go through customs. And this might be a contentious customs crossing because...
because we are leaving the European Union.
Yeah, you guys in Slovenia are in the European Union, but Croatia is not. Not yet, anyway.
Yeah, that's correct.
You guys, just between us, you think they should get in?
I think they should, because I'm really sick of the border between us and Croatia. It would be better to just abandon this border and have a free... I mean, it would be good for them to be a part of European Union.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So right now, Croatia has an application in, but they have not yet been approved. You were telling me also about the controversy with the coastline, where Croatia has an awful lot of coastline, and Slovenia really doesn't have very much.
Yeah, we have about 11 kilometers of shore, and Croatia has, I'd say, 200 kilometers, I'm not sure. And we are fighting over 500 meters of coast.
500 meters, that's it?
Yeah, it's really ridiculous.
We just passed a sign, actually, it said for the next 500 meters, rocks may fall on our car. So that's something to be concerned about. Very mountainous here, very picturesque and scenic. But this this controversy between Croatia and Slovenia, has it been something that has caused any kind of problems between the countries?
It's only on the political level. So between normal people, we usually don't get in conflicts. But there are certain politicians which run the whole circus, which I don't personally like.
Now, you've lived in Slovenia before it was part of the EU. What immediate changes did you notice?
Any immediate changes? No, it took us, I believe, a year or 2 years to switch the currency to euro, which is really, really a good thing, because we don't have to exchange the money when we travel to Austria or Germany. We can use the same currency. Apart from that, it's basically the same. One thing is that we get some projects are funded from European Union. So one big change is also the development and reconstruction of medieval architecture. We can apply for funds for funding from European Union, and there are castles around Slovenia being renovated, and a lot of the money is brought in from European Union.
Cool. Now, you're also part of, I guess, the last generation of people under Tito?
Yeah, that I'm one of the last. There was just, I was born in 81, and 82 was the last generation to be accepted to this Tito's youth, how would you call it, a club, or not club, like a almost a religion.
Maybe cult is the right word?
The cult, yeah, that would be the right word.
Now, Tito being the leader of Yugoslavia, the country that encompassed all the republics before it all got split apart. And speaking of that split, were you around for the 10-day war in Slovenia?
Yeah, I was around. I know there were alarms of a danger of air attacks during that 10-day war, but I didn't experience any so-called action. There was nothing going on around my town. There was mostly borders where the customs were mostly attacked by tanks, which invaded from, I believe it was Serbia, Belgrade.
Well, they had to have gotten through Croatia to get there, right?
Yeah, that's correct, but I don't think there was a problem getting through Croatia.
At that time, it was still one country.
Yeah,
so Slovenia declared independence, 10 days of war, and then they got their independence and soon became members of the EU.
It was not that soon, and after the declaration, after Slovenia had declared their independence, it took a couple of months to gain our official status. It was in December that we got that year that we got official status, where we got our own republic, which was recognized all around the world.
And is there much animosity left towards the former Yugoslav republics, to Croatia, to Serbia, for the past?
I'm sorry, what was that? Where?
Well, I know in the past, Slovenia, being the richest of the republics, had to send a lot of its wealth to Serbia to share with the entire Yugoslav republic. Is there much resentment towards those days when that used to happen?
The conflicts are still on a political level. So it's just between there are certain ex-republics of Yugoslavia which don't like each other that much, but I can't really comment on that.
Right. As far as people you hang out with, there's no you don't say, well, you're a Serb, you're a Croatian, we don't hang out with you.
No, nothing like that. Nothing like that in Slovenia. After the war, many people migrated to Slovenia because of the better opportunities in life. So we have, I'm not sure how many in percentage, but there are lots of immigrants in Slovenia from republics of ex-Yugoslavia, because Slovenia was the best choice to go to seek work and to seek better life. And the next country would be probably Croatia and then on.
And Slovenia is also where lots of people migrate illegally to get to the rest of Europe. Is that still the case?
Yeah, Slovenia is has a border to European Union. So if you cross Slovenia, you have entered European Union. And once you are inside European Union, there are no borders. So you can go wherever you like, to whichever country. And that's the reason why after we were accepted to European Union, we had to introduce higher standards on borders with Croatia for that, not with other countries. We eliminated borders with countries like Austria, Italy, and Hungary.
So toll booth we're coming up on?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. we are using vignettes. They're called vignettes. You pay one vignette, either a year vignette or half year vignette, and you can just drive through. Only buses and larger vehicles still have to pay a fee. And we just
just went through there pretty fast too. In the States, we have to slow down quite a bit.
We have to slow down here too, but I usually don't. So yeah, there's a like 40 kilometers per hour limit on those, but Sometimes there would be cops standing next to the booth and just trying to see how fast you're going, and they would stop you. So I was stopped a couple of times. I mean, I have a radio scanner, but it hasn't helped me so far.
Well, Kyle's here also. This is the second country we've both entered for the first time in our lives in the last couple of days. Any views on Slovenia or Ljubljana, which I pronounced wrong again?
Oh, yeah, lots. Even though we were here for a short time, I totally agree with the sentiment we read about in our Ljubljana book, that you won't want to leave. You can definitely feel that it's part of the European Union, and a little more well-to-do, sort of refined and cultured, if you might say that. And the architecture, I don't know, the look of it, the feel is very traditional. You know, seeing we saw the oldest building in Ljubljana last night. Mixed with a lot of very, you know, interesting high-tech stuff. You know, the same sort of alley barriers that are metal that pop up. You see that a lot in Holland, blocking off alleyways so that people can walk. And definitely noticed no trams, no trains, no subways in the town. That was an interesting distinction. Lots of buses. In fact, I saw a biodiesel bus with big rainbow on it. But yeah, so mostly buses. It's a small country, 2 million people, and it felt small, much in the way my hometown of Seattle feels in comparison to New York City, which is enormous. And I think King County has less than a million, King County has several million, and Seattle has maybe a million or less. So it felt really comfortable. And I really would like more time to get to know the people and walk around and photograph. But
that's the problem we're facing, because we have about 3 weeks to wander around the former Yugoslavia, and that's just that's not enough time, because every place we go to, we want to spend more time in. And wow, it's and so much of this is fairly undiscovered in regards to the American tourists or even Western European. A lot of people don't come here.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell on it too much. I'm honored and blessed to get the lay of the land and know it now, as opposed to what I think a lot of young Americans, as well as my peers and even adults many years my senior.
Presidents? Ex-presidents?
Yeah, ex-presidents as well, yeah. And perhaps even presidents. I'd love to see Obama come out here. But I think just the knowledge, getting the lay of the land and understanding that it's just as developed, just as modern, just as high-tech, if not more. I believe we were talking about how internet connectivity is too inexpensive, which is beyond me. That makes no sense. But really is good to get it and understand it, because I'm going to take that back. Coming out here, I had absolutely no idea other than what I researched about sort of the conflicts and the recent and long historical actions and things that have happened. But now I know that it's very, very much like a regular city, and I'd love to come back and explore. But.
Well, we spent a lot of time talking about how much better things are in certain places, and we've done a fair bit of that here. We've talked about how well they have health care, we don't. They have is your education pretty much financed?
Yeah, you don't have to pay a fee for college. College is free. Only private colleges are to be paid. Otherwise, even the food for students is paid partially by government.
Okay, and we've noticed things like this. We've noticed that the health care is taken care of, the education is taken care of, no fees for college. The food is a lot more organic. We were talking about that earlier, right, Carl?
Absolutely. It's uncanny. The food is, it's natural. You can tell that it was grown in small batches on someone's farm. We've been eating all kinds of things, but you know the difference. And even my American tastes expect more because so much is added that is all chemistry. It's all preservatives and chemicals. So this morning, I believe there was a couple pickles on my plate, and they tasted what I think a lot of Americans would say is very bland and very tasteless. When you eat slowly and you enjoy the food as the locals do, you really understand the difference, and you get a palate for it as a whole and natural taste, and you're not expecting the immediate gratification that a lot of these chemically infused food-like substances immediately send to your brain. I mean, you really have to wait for it, and it's just very much very different, and just I could go on and on. It's amazing, though.
I believe you described the flavor earlier as subtle.
Yeah, very subtle. Very. You have to listen for it. I know that's a very counterintuitive thing to say about your taste buds, but you really have to listen for the flavor as you're eating it. And I can totally understand how the pace, how this slow food comes into play with such rich, natural, sort of undisturbed foods. And like, I was having hard-boiled eggs this morning, and I noticed the shells were much harder. Much thicker. The yolk was a deep, deep orange instead of sort of a very pale yellow, which is what we get from a lot of the commercially farmed poultry that, you know, is very, very common in the States. I just noticed, and that's the tip of the iceberg. I noticed so much about
it was
food.
Harder to peel, and I think back home we probably have to do something to make it easier to peel.
Yes, it was very, very hard. The shell's just much, much thicker, much less fragile than what you get at home. You get a really thin shell on an egg. I know this sounds like a very obscure detail, but it is the details that make the experience that much richer.
Well, I think when you said listen for the flavor, I think that's actually a pretty good way of describing it, because back home, I believe the flavor is louder. It's a louder type of flavor. It's meant to grab your attention and to basically reverberate in your head and say, this is what you're tasting. Whereas here, it's a more delicate, more subtle type of a thing, and also, of course, a more natural type of a thing.
Agreed. Absolutely. That's precisely what I'm getting at. And it feels better, and you feel satiated. You feel... You feel like you're eating something that really belongs, you know, on your plate.
And that's the other thing. People eat a lot here. They eat a lot of food, a lot of meat, a lot of variety, but they don't get bloated, fat, obese like they do many times in the States. And I think it's not so much the food that you're eating. It's the various chemicals that are added, the high fructose corn syrup, for instance, that... make for unhealthy results and make for you wanting more and more of it.
Yeah, and you know what? I hate to bring it to this, but it's the profit motive. That's why we do these things. That's why we add fertilizers. That's why we try to get as many chickens in cages as we can, because our farmers are, you know, they're providing the best deal, and I think that lowest bidder, that American sense that we want the best deal for our dollar, it really is to our disadvantage to continue that in any, you know, and then to sell it to our children as something that's real, as the natural way. You know, going to a grocery store and getting every single part of your sustenance from one store is easily something kids grow up with, thinking that's the norm and that's where you get nutrition, and it's completely wrong in my opinion. And I'm an incredible foodie. I mean, I love to cook. I was raised on a baby food grinder, so everything my parents ate was milled and fed to me as like a homemade baby food, and so I've been exposed to all kinds of things, and this is surreal to me, to have a people that just don't bat an eyelash. This is the norm to them. It's still sinking in. In the States, you honestly, you'd have to seek out these kinds of things, and you would pay top dollar for it, and what you would get would be much less, and you know, half of it would be processed or commercially provided through a food service, you know, that trucked it in. I mean, it just boggles my mind that we don't hear more about places like Slovenia, because their way of life is absolutely, it's staggering, and you know, when you compare these kinds of things, so...
Well, now, okay, so we've established that the food is different. In fact, the hotel we were staying at earlier today, which is actually very cheap compared to Western European standards, when we checked in, we got a free beer. We each just got a free drink, and yeah, I've never gotten that in a hotel before. Here's your a voucher card for a free drink of your choice. And then this morning, free breakfast. And when we say free breakfast, it's not just what you might get in the States, which is a donut and a cup of coffee. We try to describe it, Kyle, in 15 minutes or less.
Yeah, I could go on and on and on, and I really don't want to dally too much. But there's so many things. So I'll just say it was a very wide, broad buffet. There was fresh fruit. There were fresh pastries. There was regular toast that you might get from a grocery store. So you have that too if you need it. Obviously, cereal is processed in some way. So that's about it though, as far as I saw. You know, other than small packages of butter.
Well, there was sausages. There was ham. There was cheese. All kinds of things.
Right. I mean, I'm getting the stuff that wasn't natural out of the way.
I thought you were finished. Okay, well,
No. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, geez, okay, so that was that, but I mean, the fresh stuff was like, you know, fresh cold cuts, meat and cheese. There was, you know, several kinds of scrambled eggs. There were boiled eggs. There was cottage cheese. There was two kinds of yogurt. There was granola, obviously.
All kinds of juice, coffee, tea. And you could just keep going back and getting as much as you wanted and spend as much time as you wanted there. Well, actually, it was open from 7 to 10.
Yep.
And it's just part of the package. People get this. And it just puts you in such a better frame of mind starting the day when you start with something like that.
Absolutely, yeah. And it just, it's like being at home. It's more than being at home.
Well, it's more than being at home for me.
It really gets you off on the right foot. And
in fact, it's cheaper for me to be here than to be at home.
Yeah, I think it was said at breakfast this morning between you and I that we're having trouble spending money.
Yeah, it is getting kind of difficult because things are very cheap. And of course, our generous friends here in Slovenia have been taking us out everywhere, and hopefully we can buy you lunch in Croatia or something. It would be rather nice if we have time before the train. That's the other thing. Our friend here is driving us all the way to Zagreb because we couldn't figure out how to get a bus to go from Slovenia to Croatia to get our train or a bus to Split, which is on the coast of Croatia. I just assumed, mistakenly so, that it was possible to do this easily, and apparently the only way to do it would be to take a bus or something at 5 in the morning. So yeah, we're getting a ride down the highway across the border back to Zagreb, which is where we came from, and then from there we're going to catch a train over to Split. But it's incredible hospitality that folks just offer to drive us. This will take a couple of hours probably, right?
No, it's about 130 kilometers from Ljubljana to Zagreb, so it's an hour and a half ride.
We have to go through customs, and maybe they don't like Slovenians?
I usually don't have problems, but they might just give you a hard time sometimes.
We'll see. We're used to going through borders and having hard times. But in any event, so, okay, so healthcare, education, better food, more food, generosity, but we don't want to paint the picture that it's all paradise here. Last night we were discussing some very serious problems that exist in Slovenia, and I think the most serious problem that we focused on is your internet access here in this country. And this is something everybody seems to agree with, that your internet access is far too cheap. And now, and too fast?
Way too fast.
Right, way too fast, way too cheap. What are the connection speeds that people have in their homes?
So, for example, I have an 8 megabit cable modem line. Otherwise, you can get optic connections almost in every major town. And usually people start with 20 megabit per second optical connection, which would cost around 20 euros per month. And you can also get a 100 megabit connection in the center of Ljubljana for about just over 100 euros per month.
So basically a euro per megabit. 20 euros, 20 megabits,
yeah, that's right.
100 euros, 100 megabits, up and downstream. I mean, I don't know what to say. We certainly don't have this problem in the United States. There's no question about that. And
if I may add, addition to that, you get also a cable TV subscription and a phone line.
Cable TV and a phone line in addition for the same 20 euro or 100 euro.
For the same 20 euro, you get a 3-pack deal.
I'm so sorry. we can tell you how to do it right, where you charge more and get less and slow and not very dependable service. I mean, that's I don't know. I'm speechless. Are you?
I can't believe that, especially the fact that the upstream is absolutely the same speed, and there's no other cost. That blows my mind. You know, I pay subsidized telephone and internet, and it's, you know, 7 down, almost, maybe sometimes 1 megabit up, and it's $50 a month.
And do you get cable TV and phone with that?
I pay for a landline with that. It has, you know, voicemail.
Landline's included?
It's included. It's a package. So I have a phone and digital subscriber line. I do not have any sort of TV as a part of that package, but... I'd say they're getting twice as more, if not 3 or 4 times more service for the same price, you know, if you were to work the conversions out.
Wow. Okay, so Slovenia, obviously, a nation with some problems.
I just wanted to add, it did actually come up, in all seriousness, as a problem, and it's really counterintuitive. I didn't know if you wanted to get into that. With regards to meeting face-to-face, like real-life interaction, something that's becoming quite popular in the U.S. and around the world through the hackerspace movement, it's not something you'd really say is a huge problem. But in seriousness, since people have such good connections, it did come up that, you know, there's less face-to-face interaction, which is actually sort of problematic if you're trying to build community. I don't know if you...
Well, we went to a hackerspace. What's the name of the hackerspace?
Cyberpipe.
Cyberpipe, and it was an incredible space, right there in the middle of the city, all kinds of old computers set up and working, just workplaces and key punch machines, all kinds of neat displays and places for people to just go to.
A full soldering bench, an electronics work room, as well as a 35-seat movie theater for screening.
And all of this cost how much exactly?
The actual operating costs, I think, were described as about what would convert to about $5,000 a month in the U.S. But that's heavily subsidized by the government and... academic grants, those kinds of things, very similar to what we saw in Croatia. And, you know, that's incredible. I mean, this place was a former dance club, so not only had they, you know, turned the DJ booth into a server room, but everything was very cleanly installed and fit. You know, they had recently put in new projectors, new screens for, you know, visualizations and, you know, showing... media, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the kind of thing that we have to deal with, where a lot of our setups are impromptu. You know, somebody's really bending over backwards to turn, you know, a warehouse into a hacker space, and things, you know, don't always fit, you know, and you have to kind of, you know, work around certain things. It's amazing, the contrast. I mean, this was not only a well put together space, it was beautiful. I mean, aesthetically, it was like, God, it was like light years ahead of what I've seen so far.
And there's a cafe upstairs, right in the a center part of town, anybody can get to very easily. And just a really good spirit, a good feeling. But I think part of what we were discussing was with the high-speed internet available to everybody, not enough people actually come and show up and participate. And one of the real problems is that there's a sense that there just aren't enough people in Slovenia to keep a hackerspace going, or to run hacker conferences, or to even be considered hackers themselves. And I think there must be a way to reach these people, that they're out there, but it's just kind of hard to find them at the moment.
I don't buy it entirely as a problem. I think there are ways around it, and they're already doing it. They had a small museum in there to kind of stimulate the imaginations of young people and kind of promote education. That's a great way to get people sort of out of their house and involved. And I feel like, absolutely, you could fault the rich connectivity for you know, why would somebody need to kind of huddle around the fastest pipe in the neighborhood, and by as a side effect of that, you know, creating community, which is often what we see in the States. I feel like there are ways to get people there, and that's definitely what they're doing in Slovenia. They have monthly and I think weekly events, Mobile Mondays, and, you know, other sorts of themed days of the week to get people out and work on projects, days for website developers, other themed events, and I think that's the way to do it. And they're actually there are events that they do to attract people to it because of this this connectivity being so prevalent and widespread. They really have to actively drum up enthusiasm to get people to sort of share. And I commented and I you know, I made it known sort of where we're at and some of my experiences, that it's that face-to-face, it's that being around other people and sharing your project, where your project elevates and gets a lot better, and you can take it to another level, because you have other people that are from all walks of life, you know, who are there not in the interest to make money, they're there to just simply work on projects and share, and that's the real strength of it. And there's other venues that I'm involved with that do the same thing, where you get, you know, very experienced people, very inexperienced people with, you know, all sorts of ideas working hand in hand, side by side, and, you know, sharing their opinions. And that's the fun of gathering.
Would you say you have trouble getting new members at the hackerspace?
Yeah, that's correct. Usually you have to invite them to give lectures or talks. They wouldn't just come with an idea to have a lecture. This rarely happens.
How about young members? Do you get many kids involved?
I don't have much information about that, because yesterday we were talking with Mr. Andrash. He's a head of CyberPipe, so he has much more details. I'm not that heavily involved into organizing anything at CyberPipe. I had a few lectures there, and that's basically my participation, giving lectures and meeting members and talking with them, organizing, for example, meetings. We go together to different conferences around Slovenia, and it's like people with the same ideas, with the same idea about what a hacker space should look like, what a hacker should actually do, and we share this common idea about things. Otherwise, I don't have any more details about how many members are there and organizing procedures and events.
Well, one thing that, apart from the hacker world that you showed us, which was fascinating, was this nightlife in the city that took place in two locations that I think would be unheard of back home. Do you want to describe what the two locations were?
Yeah, the first location we visited was Rok, which is an abandoned bicycle factory, once very, very large, and it was squatted by different artists, and it's now being used for different events like concerts, community houses, and there are different places with different team inside it, so they play different kind of music, and it's mostly for people with alternative thinking. It's not a mainstream, so people who don't go out to discotheques and normal clubs where they play mostly mainstream music, they find their place in places like this. And okay, the second place was Metelkova City, which used to be Yugoslavian National Army headquarters in Slovenia, and it was squatted by artists and different creative people, I believe at least 15 years ago, and there are many smaller pubs inside it where they play different music from metal, trance, dub, drum and bass, reggae, and it's like an artist's hometown. When you enter this Metelkova City, you feel like you're in another part of the world. It's very, very it's grotesque sculptures around on the walls.
Grotesque in the good sense.
Yeah, in the good sense. You might get scared if when you visit the place for the first time, but after a while you get to know the people and see they're all really friendly, and there's no violence going on. Everybody just get along.
Kyle, I know you said that you had never been to a place like this ever in your life, so how did you feel the first time you saw something like that?
Oh my God, now this is something I can get excited about. This was incredible. You guys, I don't even know where to start. Okay, I'd heard about Christiania, and I had talked to some of the Dutch people, I think Nadia in Holland.
Christiania being the place in Copenhagen, in Denmark.
Yes, you told me about, or I've listened and heard about that through your shows, and I think Nadia told us about some of the squats in Holland when we were at 26C3 this year, which fascinated me. And but I'd never seen something like this. Just anecdotally, okay. And as soon as you said, you know, hey, you know, we're gonna check these out, I was thrilled. And walking in to the first one again, as you said, I'm a little wary. It was covered in graffiti. You know, art everywhere, you know, little impromptu sculpture, rock band, as he said, playing, and, you know, living spaces created out of, you know, found materials. It was incredible. It was really incredible. There was even a small warehouse part of the factory that had what, you know, essentially looked like, you know, a tool bench and the kinds of things we see in hacker spaces, but the principle of it amazed me. The fact that it could exist, this would never happen in the States, but it could exist within a city without interference, without, you know, logistics like rent and things like that. That is so foreign to me, and it's unheard of from my world and where I've been in life, and I was a little wary when we walked into both locations, that, you know, these people might be, you know, look at me in some funny way or know that I was some sort of outsider, But you got the sense that everybody was sort of an outsider, and that's the kind of people that were welcome there. I'll chime in and add more. Please go on, though. I can think of so many things. I'm almost flustered just talking about it. It was just riveting for me to see this and be a part of it. And we honestly spent about 10 minutes in the bike factory. Just walked around one entrance, walked around one building, kind of poked in on the concert, and then walked out and headed to the other one. But, you know, sort of the murals of graffiti led us to it, and then the whole place was full of really actually incredible pieces of graffiti. So I don't know, go on and explain.
Well, it was incredible to me that there were two of these places. One was enough. One was something that, wow, this is really cool, this place exists. And of course, we went there at around, what was it, 11 o'clock at night or so. It wasn't even full yet. It was going to get much fuller later on in the evening as events started. But how did these places come to be in the first place?
Like I said, they were abandoned, and eventually they were squatted by artists. But I'm not sure where they get electricity from, or there are even bars operating inside. So I have no details about that.
But it's something that, as Kyle said, would really be difficult to even conceive of in the States. But I imagine nothing's impossible.
Yeah, I don't know what it would take to get young people unified enough to stand up to authority. I don't think we have the spine for
and
it.
And for authority to respect that. Because, as you were saying, cops don't come into this place?
They usually don't come to this place. Sometimes there would be a car patrolling, but they would just drive in, look outside from the car, and they would just pull back. They just want to make sure nothing is going on inside. And people who are in this place, they would look upon the police car really with anger. So they don't like cops there.
Sort of mock them and make them feel kind of silly, like, you know, are you serious? We really don't need this supervision. Yeah, it was very palatable, the sense that they could self-organize and manage themselves, you know, with no violence, as you said, and no incident. Go on.
I get a lot of that, just traveling around, seeing crowds of people taking care of themselves, not being supervised or told what to do by authority figures. And you see it in mass transit, people riding on buses and trams and subways, where they're trusted to pay the fare. They're not checked except in rare cases. Basically, you're treated as somebody who's a member of society that knows how to react to various things, and not always with a threat of punishment over your head. I think that's something in the States we don't really know how to handle that. We don't know how to handle being on our own without having somebody ready to punish us if we do something wrong.
Yeah, you know, we're looking for somebody to control us. And if it isn't somebody, we buy something to control us. You know, we need white earphones in our ear, and we need, pop star to tell us, you know, what to wear and how to express ourselves and what kind of relationships to have. And I think it's really damaging. And I think that's why we have so much violence, and we have people being alienated and depressed, and teenagers deciding life isn't worth living. Those kinds of problems, I think, they stem from kids not having a sort of an intermediate playground, a place to go to really explore the limits of their identity. You get this sort of weird flux between, being at play as a elementary student, and then you're thrust into taking tests and going to school, or if you can't afford or test your way into that, you must consider the military or getting a job, and you get this, it's a segue to adulthood instead of a transition.
We're doing 150 kilometers an hour. Is that allowed?
No, not really.
I haven't seen a single cop on the road either, and people are passing us. So is this like the German Autobahn?
No, the limit is 130 kilometers per hour, but I usually drive up to 160. But you won't find many police cars because they use unidentifiable cars, and they're in civil dressed in civil dresses.
That Croatian that just passed us must be doing about 165, I would say, dude.
Yeah, or even more.
So you might wonder how I was able to tell that was a Croatian immediately. The license plate said ZG on it, which means that car is from Zagreb.
That's correct, yeah, or the surrounding area.
And plus the license plate is also a little bit different because it's a Croatian license plate, not a Slovenian one. Wow, so we're almost at 160 now. This is pretty fast. And I see warning signs for various things.
So we are just passing the
now we're slowing
river.
Down.
You see this one?
This river here, yes.
Yeah, but it's right. It's a box where you fit in the radar, but right now the radar wasn't plugged in. There was a empty box, but usually they place a radar. But you would see a sign saying there's a radar ahead, slow down. So if you learn where these spots are, where radars are, you just slow down at that particular spot, and then you speed up again.
So they warn you when where the speed traps are going to be.
Yeah, that's correct.
Amazing. Well, we're approaching the Croatian border, and again, we don't want to be recording when we do that because they might take a dim view of that. We also don't want to be doing 160 kilometers when we approach the Croatian. I don't know what would happen if we did that, cause all kinds of international incidents. I'd like to close this section by asking what do you think Slovenians' opinions of Americans are these days?
We learn mostly about Americans from movies like Super Size Me and documentaries from I can't remember the name of that director, which is
Michael Moore.
Yeah, Michael Moore. Yeah, that's the guy. His books are quite popular here, and his documentaries. So we learn mostly from these documentaries, but which is a misleading, I believe. I think we should go to see the States for ourselves and make our own opinion. So my opinion about Americans, I don't really have an opinion. I love their movie industry. I love comedy. And I really, when I was a young child, I always wanted to go to America to live there. I just wanted to migrate to America because America used to be a promised land. And for example, a success story of Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's now a governor of California. So anything is possible in the United States.
Of course, when you were a child, this was a communist dictatorship. So I guess America probably looked a little bit better.
Yeah, it might be that, yeah, but it wasn't, although we had, this dictatorship didn't affect me at all, I wasn't affected by it, so it wasn't a reason to get out of Slovenia. It was just a land which offered so much more than Slovenia, and when I was a young child, I watched a lot of American movies, so this is where I got the idea of idealistic things from America. Also, there are like horror movies, Chainsaw Massacre and all other horror movies, which gives you like the creeps, and you sort of ask yourself, I mean, we don't have serial killers in Slovenia like Charles Manson and such, so there might be some traps when you think of going to United States. I mean, is it all that safe or not?
Well, we have horror movies and we have Westerns. We have Charles Manson. But is there anything else you can think of in the United States that might make Slovenians want to go there these days?
I'd say the landscape, the variety you have.
You're saying this as we're driving through some of the most magnificent landscape I've ever seen. Mountains and green fields and everything like that. You really think we can do better?
Yellowstone National Park, I think it's beautiful. I want to go there one day. And places like states like North Carolina and
North Carolina, really?
Yeah.
What, to roll in the tobacco fields, perhaps?
No, it just it comes into my mind as a nice landscape. I'm not a fan of large cities,
I love nature. So if I go to the States, I would mostly visit. I would probably rent a car and take the X Road 66 and see the most of the America by doing this trip from east to west coast.
Well, no question, there is a lot of scenic landscape in America, a lot of interesting places to see, but there just is so much here as well. And what are we approaching the border? What is it?
We are 500 meters away from the border.
From the border. Okay, so we better turn this off now. Crossed the border. We are now in Croatia, and that really didn't go very badly at all, did it?
No, I'm surprised. It went smoothly, really.
And you said we should not speed in Croatia. I see the speed limit is 130 here, which is pretty fast, but you definitely don't want to be speeding.
That's correct, yeah. I don't want to get involved with Croatian police.
Yeah, nobody does. But yeah, the good news is we got across the border. Looks like we'll make our train, assuming the train does exist, and be on our way to Split later on today. And first time I think I've crossed a border in a car in Europe in a long time. What do you think, Kyle?
Oh, that was cool. It was really cool. There were two border guards, very much like what I see on the American-Canadian border in Blaine, Washington. There's a Canadian side and then the American side, and travel in between, you have to talk to one then the other and vice versa, so that was really interesting. And you know, the first leaving was very calm and just looked briefly and then stamped things. And the second one, which was Croatian, had a couple guards in the booth, and the one who was attending to us was female, and she slid both of our passports through a stripe reader, or you know, barcode type reader, stamped it and casually handed it back. I did glance bravely at her as we pulled away, and she gave me a squinting kind of, you know, just discerning look, trying to get a good fix on us and me, and I smiled back, but it wasn't unpleasant at all.
And they didn't ask us any questions. They just pretty much looked at us, stamped us, and we were on our way. Always when you go across to America, a million questions to answer, and even into Canada you have to answer questions. We just passed a bunch of Serbian truck drivers driving cars, I guess, down from Slovenia into Serbia. So it's cool to see all these countries on the same highway.
Radio student.
Misliš da od tebe zavisi. što misliš, da bez tebe ništa ne može. Dok ne vidiš prvi put kako se lako nestaje i shvatiš tad kako si mali na sve. Isto što i ti, da li ćeš to u sebi prepoznati? Bez ljubavi ništa ne možeš dobiti. Bez ljubavi tako smo.
You've been listening to Off the Wall in Slovenia, and this is Slovenian Radio. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll be back again next week with a live show. It's Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Have yourselves a good night. Yeah, kids, welcome to Finn's Revolution. Until 9 p.m. this evening, tonight, it's Whitman Fest, baby. Nothing but Whitman and poems inspired by Whitman, a little chat about Whitman, and some oddball music about Whitman. Plus,
Tons of stuff to give away. Great tickets to the movies. Some tickets to The Runaways showing this week. Stay tuned for that. Plus other stuff, so stay tuned. Hey kids, that was a little Charles Ives there doing a little Walt Whitman from Symphony Number 4, one of the more popular of the Ives symphonies. And to me, everything by Ives is a Maserati, but that's just how I am. Finn, with you. Tonight, we are doing a very special evening of Whitman, a little tribute to Walt Whitman. Walt Whitman's birthday was yesterday, I do believe, and quite the amazing character. We're going to be discussing a little about Walt Whitman, playing some jams, doing some stuff, and overall just having a good time, hearing some poets, some poetry, maybe a little Whitman mixed into all of this. We have a special guest this evening who joins us every year for the Whitman Palooza, as I like to call it. Monk, how you doing?
Good. Good to see you again. Good to see and hear you again, Finn.
Good to see you and hear you on the airwaves, too. So we're going to, first of all, let's just do a little brief thing about how, what brings us here. I think the first year we did this was, what, 3 years ago?
This is the third year, yeah.
Right. And what brought us together specifically